I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, the man who calls himself America's toughest sheriff looks to prove it in an unlikely location, Major League Baseball's All-Star Game. Sheriff Joe Arpaio of Arizona's Maricopa County says he's going to bring chain gangs to work outside tomorrow's game in Phoenix. We'll talk with the mayor of Phoenix about that in a few minutes. But first, we look at why negotiators working on trimming the deficit and raising the debt ceiling are still at it. President Obama spoke out today in defense of his approach to the debt talks, and he called on Republicans to come back to the bargaining table. The press conference came after weekend negotiations over deficit reduction and raising the debt ceiling did not result in a final agreement. Republican leaders, including House Speaker John Boehner, said that an ambitious $4 trillion deficit reduction package could not win congressional approval if it included any tax increases. Today, President Obama pressed Republicans to drop preconditions for a deal.
I'm prepared to take on significant heat from my party to get something done. And I expect the other side should be willing to do the same thing if they mean what they say, that this is important.
If the parties don't break the deadlock, that could stall efforts to increase the debt ceiling, and that could lead to the U.S. defaulting on its $14.3 trillion debt. And officials say that that could have catastrophic effects on the economy. We wanted to take a closer look at all of this, so we've called upon two of our trusted political guides. Cynthia Tucker, a blogger and Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is back here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio. Welcome back. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Michelle.
Also with us, Mary Kate Carey. She's a columnist and blogger for U.S. News and World Report. She's also been a speechwriter for former President George H.W. Bush. Welcome back to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
Cynthia, I'm going to start with you. The press conference coming in advance of another meeting, after Sunday's meeting, which apparently was intense but inconclusive, and the president said they're going to meet every day until they get this thing done. But what was the point of the press conference today?
Well, the president clearly wasn't talking to the leaders of both parties who are going to be in the negotiations. His audience was much broader than that. He's talking to other members of Congress, particularly Democrats, and to the broader American public. About a month ago, as recently as a month ago, there was a lot of criticism of the president that he hadn't taken leadership in these debt negotiations. So now he wants to walk out, tell the American people, I am very much involved in this process. Here's what's going on. And he wanted to put Republicans on the spot to say that everybody has to make some sacrifices here, Democrats and Republicans. He wanted to set some boundaries. I think he did that in saying, I'm not willing to accept a 30-day deal, a 60-day deal, a 90-day deal. I absolutely will not go for that. And equally important, he was talking to the liberal caucus of the House Democrats, who have been very upset and will continue, no doubt, to be upset that the president has been giving away too much. I think the most important thing he probably said to them was on Social Security, that we're not going to substantially cut Social Security, but we're going to ensure that it remains in place. So this wasn't for John Boehner or Eric Cantor or Mitch McConnell. This was to the broader group of Congress and the American people.
Mary Kate, what are the politics on the Republican side? Because until the press conference, the big news over the weekend was that House Speaker John Boehner said that rather than, you know, I don't know if you want to say the right phrase, would be, you know, swinging for the bleachers
right.
a $4 trillion deal. It would be more like, since it's, you know, Major League Baseball coming up, the All-Star game coming up, that the Republicans would be more interested now in crafting a smaller deal, a $2 trillion deal, because he felt that was achievable without tax increases. And the president was saying, you know, no, we got to be more ambitious. So tell me what's going on the Republican side.
Well, the blogs on the right over the weekend, I was checking in with a lot of them. There seems to be a lot of holding the powder dry. I think there was much more outrage on the left, which is one of the reasons the president had this press conference, was to try to bring the left, Nancy Pelosi, some of the Senate Democrats over. But on the right, there's a lot of relief that we're talking about spending cuts finally, that the word taxes is toxic now on both sides, that the debate is where the right wants it to be. And I think that the Boehner decision to send a signal that new taxes, $1 trillion worth, would not be acceptable to everybody on the right who just got elected 64 seats in the House, many on no new taxes pledges. I do think right before the weekend, Charles Krauthammer wrote a great column. Wall Street Journal had two op-eds giving the right cover, Boehner cover, for lowering the corporate tax rate in exchange for closing of the loopholes. And they basically said, if you need to do that, you know, the Wall Street Journal at least wasn't going to scream, which was a big deal. And I was kind of surprised that that didn't get more play. And today in the press conference, the president did say he was still open to that. So I think there's room there. Kay Bailey Hutchinson was on this morning.
Texas senator
saying the big grand bargain is not dead. There's still room here for Plan B. Mitch McConnell said there's a contingency plan in the works. So I don't think it's dead yet. And I think there's a lot of hope on the right that this could be done, because I think people do want the big grand cure. You know, there is a moral imperative. The president's absolutely right.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about the big budget talks between the White House and congressional leaders. I'm speaking with Mary Kate Carey, that's who you just heard, columnist and blogger for U.S. News and World Report, also former presidential speechwriter, Cynthia Tucker, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Who do you think, just picking up on Mary Kate's point, who do you think has the mandate at this point? Because one of the things that fascinates me in this whole negotiation, one of the things that the president talked about in the press conference is that you can't, it's divided government. No one side can get everything that it wants. And I'm wondering who you think has the mandate here, because as Mary Kate pointed out, Republicans say, look, we were just elected, particularly in the House, we reclaimed the majority with a mandate to take taxes off the table and cut spending. And that the president's base says, well, guess what? You know, we elected you too to do whatever, you know, what? Hold more, impose more fairness in the economy, keep more people from being thrown out of work. So, Cynthia, who do you think has the mandate?
Poll after poll after poll shows that the majority of Americans support raising taxes on the affluent. This is a no-brainer. Closing loopholes for people who own corporate jets, closing tax loopholes for big oil companies who are making billions in profits. The American people support that. So if you're talking about a popular mandate, the popular mandate is behind the president's view of shared sacrifice. Poll after poll also shows that the American people want negotiation. They want shared sacrifice. They want everybody to give a little bit. So if you're talking about a broad popular mandate, that is, again, on the president's side. Everybody gives something up.
Mary Kate?
I think that you can debate which side has the mandate, but the political reality is that the reason the president said no 30, 60, or 90-day deals is because he cannot politically afford to have this keep coming up, you know, like the hand from the grave at the end of Carrie, the horror movie, the debt deal keep coming back. He's the one, he's got unemployment just on Friday at 9.2%. He's got less than 2% growth in the GDP right now. He's got majorities in polls disapproving of the way he's handling the economy. He's got a problem where he was perceived as punting on Simpson Bowles.
So you're saying he needs a deal?
He needs a deal. The Republicans think they're going to probably come back with a Republican Senate, and they can cut their own deal.
But if the government defaults and the results are as catastrophic as is being reported, I mean, doesn't that tarnish everybody?
Yes, if there's a default,
could it be
throw
the bums everybody out?
But I'm just saying the incentive, whether to cave, you know, at the last minute, I think he's got a bigger incentive because he needs this to go away.
I am thinking back, Michelle, to the fall of 2008 when the House refused to pass the bailout that George W. Bush and his Treasury Secretary asked for, and the stock market nosedived. And Republicans then, not just Democrats, but Republicans in the House were shocked. And enough Republicans changed their votes on the bailout so that it passed. If there's a debt default, we would have something much worse, so economists say. So everybody would suffer, including the American people, of course, if there's a debt default.
Finally, before we move on for today, just wanted to take a moment to remember former First Lady Betty Ford, who died on Friday at the age of 93. And I wanted to ask why she's such a significant figure, Mary Kate, for those who don't remember her.
She died at 93, which I was surprised that she was that old. She seemed much younger than that to me. Betty Ford was a very groundbreaking first lady. She got breast cancer, which was back in the days when you whispered the word cancer. And she came right out and talked about it. She had pictures of herself, you know, in the hospital, all this sort of thing. She later had a problem with addiction that she was very upfront about, and obviously went on to found the Betty Ford Center to help others through that. She talked about things that other people weren't willing to talk about, and she really changed the culture in a lot of the ways by using that bully pulpit, not necessarily for policies, but for her own personal life, things that she had been through to try to help others.
She's the wife of course, former President Gerald Ford, for those who don't remember. Do you think that she's still a role model for Republican women? I know that she's certainly
Absolutely.
An important cultural figure for women beyond politics,
yeah.
But do you think, because I know so much of the energy in the spotlight is on conservative women like Sarah
right.
Palin and Michelle Bachmann now. And Betty Ford was very much a moderate. In fact, she supported the Equal Rights Amendment,
That's right.
for example.
She was very vocal about that. No, I think she's still beloved. I think she really pushed the role of First Lady forward, and I think she was a great figure for Republican women, women everywhere.
Cynthia?
I think that's
Final
true.
Thought?
I think that even younger conservative women who don't know in particular what she did benefit from her groundbreaking role. We have such a confessional culture now. We don't appreciate it, but I think her legacy is still widely respected.
Cynthia Tucker is a blogger and a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Mary Kate Carey is a columnist and blogger for U.S. News and World Report, as well as being a former presidential speechwriter, and they both joined us here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Thank you, ladies, for joining us once again.
Thanks
for having us.